I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You can still claim your free audiobook when you sign up to a free 1 month trial of the Audible service when you go to audible.co.uk/footballramble. You might choose Pete's favourite audiobook, Bright Lights, Big City by Jay McEnany, or you might choose Luke's favourite audiobook, Digital Fortress by Dan Brown, or one of nearly 60,000 titles. Go and claim your free audiobook at audible.co.uk/footballramble now.
Best fighting trousers on, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus and I've got Jim to my left.
Hello.
Pete opposite me.
Watcher.
And Luke to my right.
All right.
Chaps.
Yes.
James Bond is back.
Yeah.
In Skyfall.
Yeah.
If you could have someone from the world of football play old Jimmy Bond, who would it be? Jimmy Campbell?
I would go for one Mr. James Redknapp.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd just like to see him just struggle through it, really.
He'd be quite good on the posters.
He would be great.
Yeah,
I don't know if he could do the sort of, I don't know if he could do the kind of, you know, smouldering look that you have to do for Bond. He's too nice, isn't he? Got a really nice,
right.
Happy face, Redknapp.
It'd have to be
so
a
very nice
movie.
Bond.
No, but you'd
really
have to,
personable Bond.
If, yeah. if he was photographed at the right time, so, you know, he had a little drink of tea and it was a bit weak and he suddenly looked up, doom, you got him there. Mm. He'd look okay. Because you're right, he would look good in a suit. The handsome fella.
Can I just say, no tea is too weak for Jamie. You know that to be true.
Cup of tea, loads of milk.
Yeah.
Oh, you've had a nightmare, Sky Manager.
Oh, I have literally shot you in the head.
Every time he sort of was with a beautiful lady, he'd have Q in his ear.
Yeah.
You know, played by Richard Keith. Have you smashed it? Have you smashed it? It'd be brilliant.
Oh, yeah. She's a lovely little Bond girl.
Isn't she rude? Didn't she rude?
Oh, just, you are literally on fire.
Yeah, he's too nice. But I think
no one would believe that he was a secret agent. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I think it's a good start.
A very good start.
Pete.
I would go for either Kevin Bond, because that would amuse me.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Bond.
Or Jan Vergoof Hesselink, because he'd have to sort of say it loads of times. He'd say, my name's Jan. Jan Venegar of Hesselink.
Credits
roll.
He's playing James Bond. You don't bring your own name into the thing.
Yes, you do. If Jan Venegar of Hesselink.
If Kevin Bond took the job and M gave him the mission, your mission, should you choose to accept it, Bond? I can't. Ari's just got a job at QPR. I've got to go and do that.
Yeah,
Marcus, I mean, you know, I don't think any of this is going to happen.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about it, fella.
All right, well, wait for my answer.
All right, okay.
Okay, fair enough. Jan Venegar of Hesselink. I do like the premise of that.
Sorry, I want to categorically state that I already know what Marcus is going to say. I just want this out there.
Yeah, come on,
let's
Luke.
Let's all look, right, so let's
go.
James Bond, quite well off, good ladies.
Shut up.
What's this?
I think Marcus is right, though. I mean, the actor himself doesn't. The actor rarely uses his own name.
I would argue that this is a middle-class question construct from Marcus's brain. All right, so...
Oh, hey, bringing the class divide
yes.
into it.
Big Sam. I was going to say Alan Pardew, because he'd love it, wouldn't he, Pardew?
Yeah.
Just go around pushing people over, winking at ladies.
Yeah.
But Big Sam would fancy himself, big time.
Yeah. Well, he's a big production.
There is not a woman under the age of 30 that Big Sam doesn't look at, chewing his gum, really suggestively thinking, I could have a piece of that.
But he'd walk into, like, space stations and, you know, like, big sort of underground lairs and stuff, and he'd be eyeing up, like, the cryogenic technology.
You got the Prozone stats on that?
Yeah.
I could stick one of our players in there.
Yeah.
And half kill him.
He'd have a good chat with Q, wouldn't he?
He would kill the villains, like... like really pro-zone data sort of intensely to make sure it was the right, most efficient way of doing it.
Yeah. No, he'd have
he'd
the
kill
stats.
All his villains by a set piece.
Yeah, yeah, no, he wouldn't get any stylish henchman death. It'll be very Route 1 death.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. Chucked off a building, shot in the head, hung
long
by the
death.
Neck.
Yeah.
Excellent. Joe Kinnear. No, I would go for Sveniggans.
You're not getting the points this week.
Yeah, you can't have the points.
I'm taking them hostage. And if you want them, you ought to go to my secret underground lair.
Young Menigal and Hesley has to rescue them.
I'll have Dimitro Albertini.
Now you're talking. Get him on an English
Italian
course.
Bond, it's controversial.
Yeah. Go on, Jimmy, you've got the points.
In this climate, it is an Italian Bond, I tell you.
Very good.
This wasn't even our original question. We've done one before. Fine. We had to remove
we've done,
it.
We've done loads. We've done loads. We picked the
we
best
one. We do 10
ones.
A week.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And believe it or not, that was the best one.
It's not true, ladies and gentlemen. It's not true. Let's go to the top league in England, which is, of course, the Premier League. Sunderland drew 1-1 with Newcastle in the big North East derby. Peter, what do you think about that?
I enjoyed the match. I thought it was over as a contest. Contest
do you?
When Tioté got sent off.
So say, do you, Tioté?
Do me Tioté.
Do you think it was a red card?
We'll kick you.
After the whistle. Kick
was it
off.
A red card, Peter?
I'm going to put it out there and say that I don't think it was the most cut and dry red card.
Son, I am surprised.
Son, I am disappointed. He was being pulled back and, like I said on Twitter, a kind of Hot Wheels car experience where, you know, it's all about inertia, isn't it? He's got all that pent-up aggression.
Does it matter if he's being held back if he boots the lad on the shin?
Well, Luke was sort of saying that the whistle had gone well before Tioté did that, but why was anybody sliding in at that point?
Yeah, basically...
I think everyone's at fault.
If you look at the replay, you can see the referee blow, I don't know what the time is, maybe about a second before it actually happened. And, you know, unfortunately, the way it turned out, Tioté got the red because he had the studs up. But the Sunderland player followed through as well, just he was lowered down, he didn't have his studs up.
And he was being pulled back effectively. It's hard to dance with the devil on your back, as Jesus once sang, possibly. Don't really remember. Don't remember RE, to be honest.
The point is that even after he got sent off, Newcastle were given the free kick. Mm-hmm. So they'd already got the decision. I think maybe either Tioté didn't hear it, or he just carried on because he's very competitive, or like you say, Pete, he was being pulled back and it carried on through. But for me, it was difficult to know whether it was a red or not. I felt a lot of sympathy for the referee in that decision. Even though I thought he had a poor game overall, I thought that decision was a tough one
well,
to get
especially because
right.
Like Larson did a proper like Dion.
He did,
Amiobi, and I think the biggest
who was the victim here, Amiobi.
Exactly, he gets the yellow for arguing Marty Atkinson,
and then gets the hook.
He gets the hook for Puccino.
See, Stephen Taylor before the game described him as the Sunderland Slayer, which makes him sound like a very niche tribute band.
Which he is.
He's scored like every flipping derby for ages, but I've never known like a more one-sided derby for a very, very, very long time. Maybe like Man City, Man United in the 90s, but suddenly they never turn up.
Well, Man City beat Man United 6-1, remember?
Yeah.
Something controversial, Peter, but I think Puccino could be the new Steve Watson.
I'd go with that.
Yeah?
And I love a bit of Steve Watson.
Yeah.
He's played in every position and he's...
He needs to add goals to his game though, Pete.
Maybe. But yeah.
No, but would that not define him too much? Are you not then looking for the goals?
I suppose so, yeah.
I think he's the very definition.
Like a hobo. He just goes where he goes.
Is he the Chris Baird? Is he the Bairdinho of Newcastle?
Oh, Bairdinho got on the sheet.
Yeah.
For Fulham, of course.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about that game.
Puccino is the very definition of a cult hero, or he's turning into that, which, you know, you did not see coming when he arrived.
Upset you were when you signed him.
I don't think it was the biggest upset of that season. But I think it was he was never going to be like this amazing player, but he's slotted in every now and again, and our captain had a
you need
fantastic
players like that.
You need that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that was disappointing from Newcastle's point of view, I'd imagine, was the manner in which they conceded the equaliser, because they gave away a needless free kick. Mike Williamson, we didn't need to do it. Sunderland were always going to pressure them in the last 10 or 15 minutes because of it was a derby game, they were a goal down at home, they were at an extra man, and the last thing you want to be doing from Newcastle's point of view is giving those free kicks away needlessly. And it was an unfortunate goal, but it wouldn't have been conceded had he not done that,
especially with Colaccini off the field as well.
Colaccini had an excellent game up until he went off. He has been excellent for them. I mean, speaking of...
he's an Argentinian international. That's massive.
Exactly.
But, I mean, he's been missed when he's not been there. And, you know, I think we need, you know, in January, we need to strengthen in his position effectively, because when he's not there, we're a shadow of what we were, even with Pochettino.
Yeah. I mean, technically speaking, after the Maradona era, isn't everyone an Argentinian international?
It's very true. Well, it ended 1-1, but the London derby on the weekend, Spurs versus Chelsea, ended 4-2 to Chelsea. Great game.
It was.
Gary Cahill got it going with a thunderous volley.
Yeah, I think it's his fourth goal of the season.
They've got a lot of goal-scoring
defenders, haven't they? Ivanovic gets on the sheet a lot. David Lowell's as well, obviously.
Mm. Actually, Cole gets the odd one.
Yeah, here and there.
John Terry. Rest him.
Terry gets...
He's not dead. And we don't want him to rest.
John Terry gets quite a lot of goals.
Rest on bench.
you'd be struggling to find an English centre-back a better technique than Gary Cahill. I mean,
that's
like, right. Rio Ferdinand back in the day. I mean, Rio Ferdinand's got good technique.
Woodgate
perhaps, yeah. But I mean, I don't remember them scoring goals of Cahill's calibre.
No.
You know, that was a great hit.
Yeah, he
gets all kinds of goals.
It took a deflection, didn't it? But it was a good hit.
But he hit it so hard that there's no way.
At times you see even forward players striking the ball that hard and it flying into Rose End. He deserves a lot of credit for that.
He scored one or two for England as well. Mm. But not the only defender who got on the goal scoring sheet. Gallas did.
Yeah.
They make it 1-1. Then Spurs, they came back 1-1, and Defoe scored a nice little one, and it was looking good for them. But Chelsea, they've looked fantastic this season. Juan Mata.
Yeah,
with a performance to win any game.
He was unplayable. Yeah, any team would have. No team would have been able to control him. No, they wouldn't have been near him. He was all over the place. Mm. He really was good. He should have had a hat trick easily.
The first goal was such an exquisite finish. That it had to go exactly there. He cushioned it perfectly. And I think that's the outstanding performance from a player I've seen so far this season. So
I think these performances have stemmed from the time that we saw him in Hyde Park. Right? I saw him at Regent's Park. Yeah, where. Yeah. Us and a few Ramble listeners were playing a bit of football.
He certainly took inspiration from that. I mean, he's on record saying that.
it can't be proved.
The thing about Spurs is that, I mean, they did come back after half time and were really good for a spell. The big loss for them was obviously Dembele not playing and Bale not playing.
Yeah.
Had they been playing, I'm not suggesting they'd have won the game, because Chelsea have been magnificent all season, we know that. But they would have had a much better chance, because they've both been excellent for Spurs. Now, I'd wonder, because I sometimes think. And it's not manifested itself yet, so at some point I'm going to have to admit that I'm wrong, that Chelsea might struggle a bit more against better teams, because they're not as robust as all that. You know, they overwhelm teams that aren't as good, and I sort of thought they might struggle a bit against Spurs, but obviously in the end they didn't.
But they're not
would they have been as robust with people like Dembele and Bale using his pace against them?
They've sort of seemed to be resigned to just attacking teams and really going for it, even like home and away.
That's great to
exactly
watch.
The same
it's
way.
What Abramovich wanted, isn't it?
In the whole John Terry row, when people have been questioning Di Matteo about it, obviously he's been changing the subject as quickly as possible, because I imagine he's just bored of talking about it. He said something like, that's not what we're thinking about. I'm thinking about training the team and how we can sort of better link defensive and attacking play. So that's obviously something that's on Di Matteo's mind as well. He's working to stop that, and it worked against Tottenham. Credit must go to Defoe for his finish.
He's
absolutely
really improved, hasn't he?
Brilliant.
He's really improved.
I think
he's so sharp.
I just think he needed... a bit of belief behind him and a run in the side. I mean, Redknapp would always use him as an impact sub, which I think Defoe can play very well. But I think he's a very enthusiastic player. Loves getting the ball.
Yeah.
You know, there are one or two English strikers who can be a little bit nervy sometimes with the ball. He absolutely loves it. He run at players, shoot, get on the end of things.
I think it's more than that. I think what it is for me is, I think back in the day, maybe when we first started doing the show 4 or 5 years ago, there were question marks over the phone. There was always an argument about whether he'd always let you down. Yeah. Is he too direct?
Is he greedy?
Is he unintelligent or greedy? And he has really rounded off his game as he's got older, and he's a real asset now, and there can be no doubt the way he's performed this season of how well he's played. I mean, he has played very well, and he really does deserve an immense amount of credit, because Spurs have been light on strikers, and when Adebayor goes, they're gonna struggle, so they need him. They rely on him more often than not now.
I mean, what's also impressive about Defoe is the way that he's not actually sacrificed any of that sort of kind of fox in the box style ability that, you know, actually drew criticism for, people saying he was too greedy because he was very sort of goal orientated. I mean, that goal at the weekend, it was such a quick ball that came into him. You have to make a split second decision to be able to get so much brilliant technique around it.
He's razor sharp, isn't he? And that sort of thing. He's in that sort of environment. He's razor sharp. And you're right, Jim, because it's easy for us to sit here and say this, that he's too selfish, or he used to be a bit like that. But if he loses goals out of his game, everyone's going to judge him 10 times more, because he's not going to get runs his size.
And to be fair, under the the last manager, every single transfer window, he'd see about three strikers being signed anyway. So, you know, you're always watching your back when he's
I think ABB's come in and he said to him, you know, you're one of, or if not my main man. And that gives a striker so much confidence. Mm-hmm. As you say, this sort of revolving door of strikers.
Well, and also, Adebayor's just coming back from injury now, isn't he, as well? So things may change. But I think Adebayor goes away to the African Cup of Nations in the new year anyway.
Well, Defoe's given himself a great chance of staying in there.
Yeah.
Hooray.
But they'd lost the game, and Chelsea march on very handsomely. Now, Manchester City got a good result at West Brom. West Brom hadn't lost a home game all season. City down to 10 men with Milner being sent off, and pulled it back with two Dzeko goals in the last 10 minutes.
Well, speaking of sort of impact styles with Dzeko, is there a better one in the league than Dzeko?
Wasn't happy about it though, was he?
No, he wasn't. But you can understand that. You don't want to be seen as
it's early on in the season for that sort of disquiet, though, isn't it?
I didn't know.
I think from the end of last season as well.
Would you like to see Arsenal take a punt on Dzeko?
I'm not sure. I don't think Dzeko would fit the system Arsenal play. I don't think that would work. He'd be a bit of a kind of, you know, square peg in a round hole there. But I mean,
you've got Shamak as your impact sub.
Exactly, yeah. indeed. But to be honest, I think obviously Dzeko's a better player than Shamak, but it would be a similar problem because they're quite similar. Shamak intends to be a player like it's probably the best way to put it.
And Nicholas Bentner to come back.
No, he's gone, mate. He's at the old lady, isn't he?
No, but he's on loan.
No, that's
oh, forgive me. Sorry, yeah. I was hoping. Wanting it back, I think.
You can be forgiven for that. Big J Mill, this is his first red card, isn't it? It's his first red card of his career, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think.
And he's been around since he was about 12, remember? Yeah, he's been around a long time.
From watching the England-Poland game, which I know we'll briefly talk about later, perhaps.
Hope not.
It looks to me like James Milner is an attempt at making another Wayne Rooney in a lab. That's not quite work.
It's got
all the same sort of functionality. It's got all the graft, but none of the human.
Has it got the X factor? Yeah. Because Wayne Rooney is a funny combination of real rugged English strength and a little bit of continental flair, isn't it? It's quite a funny combo. Yeah. But also, that surgically removed.
Get the impression it was never there. That's the one thing they couldn't quite capture and get right.
I feel quite sorry.
If Rooney was less of a sort of good finisher or didn't have that bit of flair, he'd be a functional player anywhere on the pitch.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I feel a bit sorry for Milner because he is one of those players who, both for Manchester City and for England, you never see him sort of, you know, not bust his bollocks. And it's not really his fault that there's a paucity of midfield players for England.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets a nod and people go, oh yeah, James Milner, he can run up and down all day, brilliant, that's just what we need, sarcastically. Yeah. I think it's not really his fault, is it? You know, he's doing his best.
Yeah,
what are the alternatives? It's not as if he's spoiling the tiki-taka game of England.
Exactly. We'd be like Barcelona, one for Milner.
Well, that's what I mean. If England were a club side, Milner would be one of like those sort of players that go, yeah,
he'd be a cult hero.
Shifting, you know.
Yeah.
He'd be like Pochettino.
He'd be like James Flash.
In years to come, when England are winning trophies, you know, we'll say, well, every England side needs James Milner. Yeah. Perhaps, I don't know.
And back to the Man City game, though. I listened to that game on the radio, and when I watched the highlights on Match of the Day, the commentator, when West Brom scored, because they opened the score, didn't they?
Yeah, Long did.
He said, oh, yes, against the run of play, they'll be gutted about that, Man City. But the radio was seemed to suggest that Man City weren't really at the races.
Well, I think City had a few more chances and better efforts on goal.
Mm. But West Brom have been quietly going about their business, especially at home, haven't they?
Oh, they've been excellent. They've been excellent.
Brilliant finish from Longy. Really, really just.
Wasn't it?
Nipped in and just. So smart and quick.
We're talking about it was, in the sense with like Defoe, very controlled and nice technique. And
well, that was a shot of Molyneux, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But also with Long, it's one of those things where sometimes you watch maybe when you're a bit younger, you watch the game on TV and you think, oh, why doesn't he just run there and score? Because the dimensions look wrong on TV and those gaps aren't as close as they look. But Long actually did one of them.
Yeah, he did, yeah. And City thought, the City defence actually thought, he must be offside. But he wasn't. He wasn't offside by about a yard. And Lukaku had a couple of late chances on that overhead kick, which could have got him a point.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll be gutted because they had a couple of breaks. When Man City were really pushing the game,
that's right.
West Brom had a few breaks and they just couldn't take advantage of it.
But City, well, Mancini very successfully mixed it up by bringing on Dzeko and Tevez as well. Just it changed the game. Just
look at the players he's got.
I know, of course, but you've still got to deploy them in the right way.
Of course.
It was Aguero who set him up, Dzeko, and a lovely finish as well.
Oh yeah,
I mean he could have had a touch.
You remember him when he played in Germany and that season he had at Wolfsburg. Where he was,
oh, it doesn't surprise me. I'm just credit where credit's due.
He's one of those players, right? Edin Dzeko, you know, he was one of the hottest properties in Europe when he signed for City.
Well, he should be the main man
any club, you know, normally you would think, but this is the standard that, you know, that they're trying to conquer Europe, aren't they? You've got to have that. I mean, look at the great Man United sides of the past. Everyone talks about the treble winning side in 1999 and the four strikers. They had four top quality strikers.
Well, two different partnerships.
Yeah, it's what you've got to have if you really want to sort of put a, you know, attempt in at winning everything, which they do.
Well, City tend to play with they can play with one front man as well. I mean, how many people have you got vying for that spot? Yeah. So what I'm saying, Jekyll, it's no great shame that you're on the bench for Manchester City. You could do a lot worse. Manchester United, it's a small consolation, isn't it?
We're really delighted with that.
Which he's definitely listening, of course. Manchester United beat Stoke City 4-2. Stoke came right out the traps at them.
I thought they could have been about 3-0 up.
Yeah. Rooney gave him a helping hand.
What really made me laugh about that was the way Ryan Shawcross celebrated it, as if he'd scored it. Yeah. Everyone can see he didn't score it.
I don't know why players do that. You're never going to get away with it, not this day and age.
Well, it's a goal.
I think Shawcross is going, let me have this, just this moment. Yeah. Let me have this 10 seconds. The truth will out, we all know that. Let me have this 10 seconds. Don't get many.
My mum's here.
Those fans in front of us don't know for the minute.
Yeah. It was a really comedy own goal by Rooney as well. The ball just sort of hit him. He didn't really know what he was doing.
A really attacking header, though.
I was going to say, there was some great crossing from Manchester United. That ball into Rooney was superb, and then Rooney's ball into Welbeck's goal was Beckham-esque.
But Rooney's own goal, though, you cannot run towards your own goal at that velocity and expect something bad to not happen. he did make up for it.
Kightley scored a great one.
It was a lovely
determination,
one.
Determination personified.
But the marking for RVP's goal was absolutely fictional. There's no one around him. Yeah. Old Trafford. He's one of the world's best players. What are you doing?
Ridiculous finish from him, though.
You can imagine the Stoke defenders after the game. What are they saying? Oh, I didn't think he'd score it, to be honest. He's 6 yards out.
I forgot he was on the field.
Yeah. Didn't he go to Barcelona? That was the other one.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
But
Man United and Manchester City both didn't really play, from what I saw, play that well and still come away with sort of results. So that's
I think it's good United, for the title. United turn that around,
but they could have been so many goals down. That's the thing.
That's the United, isn't they? Could have been, but they weren't, and they woke up.
But I mean, and they massively woke up, and then as soon as they did, Stoke were never going to get anything out of the game. But it's one of those ones, isn't it, for away fans. You just hope that your team can start well at Old Trafford, and United are very, very slow out of the blocks. And they got the goal, and they did look good. And it's just, you're thinking, come on! And then slowly but surely, the Kraken awaits.
It's just most teams, I mean, obviously Spurs did it a week or two ago, but most teams just haven't got the psychological preparation or wherewithal to survive it.
To go at them.
They can't.
To actually attack them.
And it's such a physical effort to keep the ball from them for so long, or chase the ball down at Old Trafford as well. It becomes very tough for them.
But how much, I mean, is it the Old Trafford factor? Because Stamford Bridge is just not the same arena.
It's nowhere near as big.
No, of course not. Anfield lost its magic years ago, I would say, for that kind of psychological edge.
Marcus Speller at thefootballrealm.com.
It's just Marcus Speller. He's did it right.
Is a quote I heard recently.
By Pete Donaldson.
Oh, this is like the Encina Reservoir Dog.
And then
Liverpool fans, I like you very much.
And the Emirates again is one rubbish. Could argue that I've heard you say before, Jim, but does how much of that do you think Old Trafford?
It's a factor, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not. But it's not even necessarily the fans. It's not a fan. It's not.
I know. I'm not saying
it's the history around. But I mean, obviously, the main part of this debate is that Manchester United are a very good team. That's simple as that, really.
But I mean, they have a kind of mythos behind them as well, though, don't they? That you're almost not facing the individuals on the pitch. You're facing Man United in your head, and that's always going to be a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's as established as it was perhaps in the 90s when they were just relentless. But I think it's still a factor. Yeah, I mean, it's proved time and time again to be a factor. Interesting story coming out of Old Trafford is that David De Gea has signed with a new agent, and he's signed with Jorge Mendes, the Portuguese super agent. And there's been a lot of talk this week
that, returning to Spain.
Yeah, that,
yeah,
that
homesick.
No, apparently he's not homesick. Apparently that's a rumor that's not true. But Mourinho,
you'd understand.
Yeah,
it,
but the big talk in the Real Madrid dressing room is of course been for a while that Mourinho and Casillas don't get on. Because Casillas has come out and denied it, but Mourinho is, to all intents and purposes, apparently looking for a long term replacement for Casillas, and this. Move from De Gea from his agent to Mendes is seen by some people as that he wants to move back there.
That would
back
be
to
a
Madrid.
Boneheaded move on De Gea's part, because Casillas isn't going anywhere for some time.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose Casillas.
Oh, at least, what is he, 30 now?
Yeah, Casillas has been the ever present there. I mean, he's seen off a lot of managers, Casillas, like Rao used to. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I was about to say, yeah, I mean, Mourinho would go before Casillas.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at De Gea and you think something's not quite right there, is it? Because he's an excellent goalkeeper, but he's not been.
I know what you mean.
That takes a while, he's a young man, and I wouldn't want to judge him too early on, but you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Well, it's the rotation. I mean, any other position, it's fair enough. You want the competition. I think as a goalkeeper, it undermines you more than anything. It's a demonstration of a lack of faith. You know,
yeah,
and that's going to play on your mind.
How many goalkeepers have we seen come and go from Old Trafford?
Yeah, well, when I did Matt Murray interview on the Ramble website, he said to me, we talked a bit about De Gea and Lindegaard. Yeah, he's like, I still do it. No. he said the one thing I wanted from my manager at all times, no matter different styles, different managers with different ways of doing things, I just wanted to know that I was number one. If I made a mistake, it wouldn't matter. I'd still be the manager's number one.
That's right.
And he said it's difficult for them because they don't have that assurance.
But this is the same thing with strikers, you know, and could be the same thing with Defoe. If you miss a chance, oh my goodness, I might have lost the number 9 jersey, yeah, or whatever it is. Yeah. But I think goalkeepers is the nth degree of that kind of psychology.
And in a way, I don't think it's the same for Lindegaard, because he's seen as the underdog in the situation. So when he plays, it's like he's winning.
I think he's been superb when he's played in the game. Yeah, exactly. He really has.
Well, the pressure's off, as Jim says.
Yes, maybe that's a part of it, yeah.
What about the kick it out campaign? I mean, Rio Ferdinand boycotted it. Alex Ferguson said he'll be dealt with, and then has kind of maybe realised that wasn't the best thing to say.
I'm not surprised. No, I have very few fetishes in this world, apart from the boobs and the bums, but old middle-class white men talking about what black people should do with their time, I find terrifically exciting. So my penis has just been erect all week. It's been wonderful.
I wouldn't call Fergie middle class somehow.
Yeah,
I would argue that he's more middle class than upper class.
He's a champagne socialist, isn't he?
He's loaded.
Well, okay. Not his roots, but I'll take your point.
Yeah, I'm just saying that he hasn't really got much right talking about how black people should conduct their affairs in their lives. That's what I'm saying.
To be fair to Ferguson, he did say that he sat down with Rio Ferdinand and was impressed with his conviction at why he did it. And basically, I think he said it was a communication issue. I think Ferguson didn't know that was going to happen. So obviously, you know, he probably would have wanted to be aware of that, and they wouldn't have had this situation in the first place.
Well, don't open your mouth about stuff
But I think that's a one-dimensional way of looking at it. I think, you know, you've got to look at the way that how Ferguson operates compared to how other managers operate. Brian McDermott said about Jason Roberts, he's free to do whatever he wants. We chatted about it. I support him. Mm. Alex Ferguson is a manager, rightly or wrongly. Mm-hmm. I'm not defending him on this point.
No,
but rightly or wrongly, he exerts maximum control over all his players at all times. And he was misguided in what he said. But the reason he said it is because he wants so much control over his players. He rules that club like he's basically a despot, doesn't he?
And
that's
how it's worked.
And that's why he came out. And that's why I think you've seen him backtrack a little bit, because he realised he was wrong.
But it's a bigger debate than Manchester United.
Of course, it's a bigger debate than football. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but as Luke says, Ferguson doesn't see it like that. Ferguson was asked the day before or 2 days before, whatever it was, will your players be wearing those T-shirts? And he said yes. And then one of his players, one of his biggest players, doesn't do it. Mm. He said it's embarrassing. And you're absolutely right, Luke. The way he runs that club, people are going to think, oh, has Ferguson lost not the dressing room, but there's something wrong there, and he can't have any of that.
As Pete said, though, it's a wider issue than Man United. I think it's a really interesting one. Gordon Taylor from the PFA has come out and said, I think, you know, basically said, you know, it's damaging to keep this dragging on. It's you know, not an issue that's getting helped by people keep talking about it, and people need to reflect on it and maybe just sort of calm down a bit. But I couldn't disagree more. If the players themselves are the people that feel that the kick it out campaign is not working, then there's a responsibility really to keep that debate going and see what can be done to make it more effective.
How is putting a certain shirt on a black player going to change fucking anything?
Exactly.
It's the white twats shouting the crap in the first place.
It's just the Terry affair, isn't it?
I think it comes down to a lack of leadership from UEFA, FIFA and the FA, because it's easy to, I mean, people have got their own reasons for wearing or not wearing a t-shirt. I mean, I happen to think the players are quite complacent in whether they wear them when they wear them anyway. And Jerry Lescott's not worn one for years, and no one said anything about that because it's his personal decision, and that's fine. But the point being that to sort of target Kick It Out or show racism, red card, who basically have got no decision making process at all. They're a pressure group, and they're funded part by football associations, but they haven't really got anything to hang their hat on. But it's easy for us to say, well, let the FA and let UEFA and let FIFA do their job and punish racism, but they don't do that.
No, yeah, exactly.
When they don't do that, it undermines the whole thing, and there's a lack of leadership on the issue in total.
And it's a global game, so when we see like Russian federations handing out tiny, you know, bans and tiny
UEFA doing that as well.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, UEFA and FIFA and all the like the big organisations organisations handing out tiny little fines and stuff, and you know, it's you can't get away with that sort of thing. There has to be some sort of unified agreement, you know, unilateral agreement between all of the federations in football. It's doable. You can get banned globally as a football. You can get banned like that.
But also, the punishments are completely misguided as well, because it's almost like the punishments don't have any thought put into them. If you just chuck money, fines at players who are wealthy. I mean, what you want to be doing, in my view, is punishing them in a way that actually makes them regret their actions and put something back into the community, because racism doesn't start, it doesn't have its genesis in football.
No.
People come to football grounds and maybe they commit acts of racism, but they're not racist because they go to football. Yeah. And banning racism from a ground doesn't stop racism, it just stops happening in football. Well, it starts with education.
It's a societal problem. You won't be able to get racism out of football. That in itself is quite an abstract concept. The next best thing you can do is make it clear that it's so unacceptable that people over time realise what a stupid thing it is, as has happened in wider society. You know, we're a lot more tolerant society as time goes on, and that will trickle down into football in the cases where it is still a problem. But I think the thing with the Kick It Out campaign, no, they're not affiliated properly to the FA, they don't have any sort of decision making, but they are part funded by the FA, and that's the most visible thing that the players can do to sort of essentially use as a scapegoat.
Would you have liked
to actually get some change coming around?
I agree with that, but would you like to have seen instead of the fine and the ban for John Terry, for example, would you like to have seen him do your community work and go into the community and say, oh, I was wrong, this is why I was wrong?
I don't know that the FA can do that. No, the problem. Practically.
Well, I mean, that's a different answer. But I mean, would you like to see it? Was the question.
Well. Yeah, in an ideal world, yeah, I'd like to see him sort of cleaning the streets, but I think that's...
No, but I mean actually educating people on why... Because I don't happen to think personally John Terry is racist. So I'd like him to make an example and say... Because he's all but admitted in his statement, I accept what I did was wrong and the language I used was unacceptable. He said that.
Yeah.
So why doesn't he go out into the...
He's said it to be offensive in the heat of a moment to insult a player, I'm sure, yeah. But I just... Like I say, it's two different things. I think you need... There needs to be like a 10-match ban, automatic ban, something like that. I think the difference between Suarez and Terry is, you know, Suarez got 8 games because apparently he said racist things more than Terry did. I think that's stupid.
I think a
10-game ban is a huge chunk of a season, and players will not do it. But it's weird that it's come up twice recently. It's not been an issue for a long time.
But John Terry didn't appeal the final decision from the FA, so why is he still playing football for Chelsea Football Club? That's what I don't understand. Why Chelsea haven't, you know, we can't brush it under the carpet, because it just keeps on happening, and he's a very visible footballer, and you know, sometimes you've had a footballer that's pissed all over your chips. Throw the chips out, throw the Terry out with the bathwater, you know what I mean? it just seems perverse to me that we're saying one thing and doing the other. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, the addendum to that is, if John Terry really had any class about him, he probably would have given up the captaincy and taken the situation out of Chelsea's hands. And Chelsea should have restricted him to captaincy, I firmly believe that. But Terry, because the point is, you can say all these things, can't you? You can say, I regret this, I regret that. But the actions of a man who's quick to tell everyone how brave he is and how much he stands up for things and how much he's not scared to say sorry about stuff. He says
how
that all the time.
How much of a big man he is.
Yeah, how much of a big man he is. In his own words, actions speak louder than words. Hand over the captaincy then. Show how regretful you are for the situation.
Well, this is what I don't understand about Terry.
Maybe he's thinking about his legacy at this point in his career.
He's
sort of going,
fucked.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But he doesn't know that. He walks around his multi-million dollar house.
Yeah, but we talk about the legacy.
He walks around with his house.
He walks around.
That is a brave thing to do.
He walks around his million-dollar house, pissing in pint glasses and stuff, and just throwing them in the fireplace. You know,
he's got a disabled parking bay outside his house in his own grounds, just so he can park in it.
Yeah,
he still pays the fine,
and he eats dogs as well. So
nice.
Jim told me.
Now that's racist.
We're going to move on from this debate, because we could probably spend the rest of the show with it doing that, but
we'll have a racist Christmas
special.
Instead of having old white gentlemen talking about, you know, racism, you know, we're basically just for young white people.
I'm not that young.
Youngish.
No, okay, youngish.
Don't give us too much credit there. Let's talk about Grant Holt. A man who transcends...
You've turned it round.
Racism.
Transcends race.
He scored against Arsenal in a great win for Norwich, and a poor result for Arsenal.
I didn't see it, but did Grant Holt start that game?
He did, yeah.
Because he's not started that many games. He's certainly not started as many as he started last season.
No.
But he's shown that when he plays, he does the business again.
It was a terrible spill, wasn't it?
It really was.
I didn't see it, sorry.
Big Vito.
He missed a couple of chances, didn't he?
Big Vito! Yeah. Big Don Vito!
Well, Arsenal were poor, to be fair. Norwich just sort of...
just put up a brick wall, basically, and went to hit them on the counter, and Arsenal just had no answer to it. That was the second half.
But Jim, I was thinking, because obviously when you see that, you think, oh, Arsenal must have battered them, but just couldn't score. But then on 5-5 really yesterday, they were saying it wasn't like that at all.
No, I'm afraid not, pal. Right, let's get out of these shores and go to La Liga. There was a 9-goal thriller at Deportivo La Coruña, where Barcelona beat them 5-4. Messi got a hat-trick, of course, but 5-4!
They were 3-0 up after, I think it was 17 minutes.
Oh, God.
Those glorious goals that they scored.
It's a crazy game. I think Barcelona, and actually part of a more serious point here, is because Real Madrid, what are they, 8 points behind them now?
Mm.
I mean,
still.
Yeah,
not even now, is it?
But there's a point where you think, and it certainly seemed to be evident in the parts of that game I saw, that Barcelona sort of switched off a little bit. It was almost like they Real Madrid almost the big enemy that has disappeared, and they're sort of skipping through the meadows with nothing to worry about. And these teams are football players as well, will score goals if you let them.
There's a danger of tortoise in the hair sort of syndrome.
Yeah, possibly.
It was Montoya, wasn't it? He didn't have a fantastic game. I know he's young, but I was just like, he's just getting beat. All ends up. Messi, he played obviously in international, and 2 days later he's forced to play in this match.
It's incredible.
And he's got a baby like literally days away from coming. He says he's knackered.
Yeah.
And that's what he's like when he doesn't sleep.
Hat-trick away from home.
I mean, in fairness, Deportivo are a poor side. I mean, they've only won one game this season.
So, you know, Barcelona's conceding four against anyone is crazy.
That goal that Messi scored, that Fabregas assist, was amazing. Yeah.
Well, when he smashed it top corner.
No, but he threaded the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Messi right foot at bottom corner, but the way that...
Fabregas, the outside of the
ball wasn't on. It just wasn't
it's
on.
It's incredible.
Yeah, really good.
It's just not possible.
Jordi Alba's scored an own goal as well.
He did.
As well as a goal.
They've got the win, and that's all they care about, isn't it?
How much do you reckon Villanova's thinking about signing up Messi's new kid? Like, not even out of the...
It's like, you know, that Vinicius and Serena Williams' father signed them both up for tennis academies before they were born.
Wow.
Right. So he was just decided they were going to be tennis players. I reckon that
happens
with Messi.
Every tennis player ever, though, doesn't it?
I think so.
You have to have a mad tennis dad, otherwise you're doomed.
A really pushy parent.
Yeah. Did it happen to Jeremy Bates, do you think?
I don't even know who that is.
That's the answer.
I'm the same age as Roger Federer.
He was a pre-runner. He was a brilliant.
You're always saying that. It's weird.
Because it affected me that much. Yeah, cheer up.
It's not a boast. It's a chat line. I've heard him use it. Same age as Roger Federer.
We're very
know.
Similar in many ways. Only that one.
Yeah. Jeremy Bates was the pre-runner to Tiger Tim Henman.
The Tim Henman chip in charge.
We're in La Liga. Why are we talking about Tiger Tim?
You started it.
Yeah. Radamir Falcao.
Radamel.
Should be Radamir.
Yeah.
Radamir Falcao sounds like a sort of character from Game of Thrones, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, Radamel Falcao.
Can I just say,
well,
you've brought him up 107 goals in his last three seasons.
Delish.
Sail it home.
Were you talking
and toot the horn.
Probably the most
crash into the pier.
Yeah. I saw
clever girl.
I saw most of this match. Real Sociedad should have had like a couple of goals. They were, you know, they had so many chances.
Well, true, but they didn't. They didn't take them.
Only because they brought down the Onion and then Falcao got it.
And Atletico Madrid are still keeping up the pace. You're talking about Real Madrid, you know, the tortoise and the hare situation, but Atletico Madrid is still in there.
Oh, that'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? Imagine if they nipped in.
I think we all know it's going to end in glorious failure.
Yeah, of course it is.
But, yeah, but with Falcao,
but let's get
though.
Behind them while we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. No, I'm up for that.
Of course. Malaga, they're only 5 points off the top in third.
Did you see Michel's goal for Levante at Getafe?
No, I didn't see
that. Absolute bomb of a
hit.
From about 35 yards out, a couple of minutes from the end. And it's the most bizarre thing, because obviously all the Levante fans is sort of celebrating because it was a 1-0. Basically, it was the winner. It was 1-0 away from home at Getafe. Simultaneously, because it was so late in the game, as the Levante fans all got up to celebrate, all the Getafe fans just got up and left.
Oh,
so by the time
the
celebration fans were finished, there was like no one left.
It's a nice moment, the whole stadium.
What an important goal.
Yeah, the goal got everyone off their feet.
Clear the stadium.
Superb stuff from La Liga. Let's go to Serie A, where the top of the table clash ended in a victory for the old lady. Of course it did. They're not going to lose anytime soon. They beat Napoli 2-0. Paul Pogba scored a nice one.
Yeah, nice to see what he's actually like.
Yeah.
Juventus are on an amazing run. The only run I can think of in club football at the moment is the Shakhtar run, who I think they've won 21 league games in a row.
Yes. That's nowhere near what you
No, but they've won every game, though.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the Shakhtar. I think they won the last nine of last season. They've won the first 12 of this one.
The Bentner effect.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think the Juventus were quite good before Bentner came along, though, weren't they?
Quite good.
Bentner invented football, that's what I heard.
It was the thought of signing him that spurred them on, probably. If we carry on this, we can get Bentner.
When he's angry, he smashes up all the players' cars. So, yeah. Yeah.
What about Juventus defender Leonardo Bonucci, who had an armed robber point a gun at him last
week?
And then
punched him, didn't he?
Well, he was at a car dealership.
Did he knock
with
him
his...
out?
Hang on.
No, it's better than that.
Oh, right. He was at a car dealership with his
did
wife.
He get shot and died.
With his wife and baby son. And the robber came up to him demanding his watch, and Bonucci just floored him.
Yeah. he then chased him off.
He did.
And the guy jumped onto a scooter and drove
with
off.
His accomplice.
And the guy was
so typically Italian.
A very Italian. A literal Italian job.
The guy who Bonucci punched was pointing a gun at Bonucci while running away, going, "What are you doing? I've got a gun."
That's amazing.
Brilliant.
That reminds me of the time when apparently Maurice Greene's bag was snatched at an airport terminal and the guy legged it, so Maurice Greene just chased him as the fastest man in the world at that point. Just took it back off.
Oh,
him.
Yeah, that's right. Dear, oh dear.
What were they thinking?
That genuinely is quite disturbing, though, that armed
robbery. You know, it's probably one of those situations where you don't really think about what you're doing. It's more of like an impulse rather than an active sort of legitimate.
It could have gone a lot worse.
This does show that, you know, Bonucci probably has a career after football. It's some sort of maverick crime sleuth.
Yeah.
Just going around.
Don't spoil a future opening question.
maybe he's a Torino fan. Who knows?
Yeah, that's right. Elsewhere, Lazio beat Milan 3-2.
Incredible goals from Lazio.
Oh, weren't they just?
Kandreva's was a beauty. Weren't Lazio 3-0 up at one point?
They were 3-0 up. El Shaarawy getting on the
show. Yeah, he's again. Sort of the only bright spot for me at the moment.
Milan are 15th. With 7 points from 8 games.
It's quite sad to watch how bad they are.
Well, I saw, because De Jong scored, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, why did you go there? You were at City, and I'm thinking, oh, what?
It's
Milan. Yeah. And I'm going, why did you go there?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, they've obviously got no money. They're in real dire straits. Shaarawy, who's you know, probably the bright spot for them, as I just said, and he's been relied upon an awful lot. He's only 19.
Should we get blooming Seedorf back? That's right.
He's got a few. I think he's got a few league goals. Probably got 5 or 6 league goals.
Yeah, he's
doing well.
Well.
He's one of the, as you say, one of the few bright spots.
Well, we said at the start of the season, didn't we, that he needed a big season. He's doing his bit, but unfortunately, they're leaking goals. Lazio were fined €40,000 for their fans' racist behaviour at White Hart Lane.
Standard. Yeah.
Kick him out.
So
kick him out of the tournament.
That'll be the end. Lazio's problem with racism.
Yeah. Just one thing on the Milan thing. I mean, we all agree that you can't sustain those sort of personnel losses and not suffer so badly.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, the amount of players they lost and the quality of those players as well, it's going to be difficult for them.
Well, the bottom was always going to fall out of Milan, weren't
they? And there's talk that they want to get rid of Allegri, but they just can't afford to get anyone else in.
Mm.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's sad.
How the mighty are mismanaged. Mm. We have to go to the Bundesliga. Because
can we talk about Rodrigo Palacio's hair first?
Oh, for Inter.
Scored for Inter. It's the worst haircut in football, I'm putting it out
there. What
do
you
think? Is it worse than Neymar's?
Yeah, it is. It's one very long rat's tail. The rest is a skinhead.
Is it worse? It's not worse than that Ronaldo haircut in 2002.
Oh, what, the little triangle?
No, but the thing is that he's persisted with this. He's always had the rat's tail. Whatever other haircut he's had, he's always had the rat's tail. It's rubbish.
Yeah. Maybe he's forgotten.
Maybe angry. Maybe he has forgotten it's there.
Right, Bundesliga?
Yeah, okay. That was my insightful point about Inter's win.
I think you've covered off all the bases there.
Can we talk about Palace losing their manager? No, good, carry on.
Go on.
Oh, yeah, big Dougie Friedman's gone to Bolton.
Controversial.
Unbelievable.
Controversial. And in the Bundesliga, sorry.
You were thinking about Dougie Freeman, weren't you?
Yeah, I was thinking.
He's a handsome chap, Dougie Freeman.
Is he gone to Dusseldorf? they got beaten 5-0 off Bayern Munich. Bayern have maximum points from 8 games. They've scored 26 goals, conceded 2, and managed 6 clean sheets. They're 5 points clear at the top of the
sheet.
They are clearly fed up of this not winning nonsense. They've had enough.
They've conceded 1 league goal in the last 6 games. Everything's working for them. Mandzukic is playing well, scoring goals. Müller's playing really well, scoring goals.
Cruz as well.
Mm. And you know that they'll get to the quarters and the semis of the Champions League. Yeah. It'll go wrong for them.
Well, last year.
It was the ultimate.
But yeah, they play. I think their first game against Dortmund, who always beat them, is the 1st of December, I think.
But Dortmund aren't going so well.
They're not going so well.
No, they started poorly.
They lost 2-1 at home to Schalke.
But Dortmund started last season poorly as well, and they're still doing okay. And the Schalke game's a derby, so it's a big blow for them. But
it's their first home defeat in over a year.
Bloody hell!
Against their rivals, you know, there was bound to be crowd trouble.
Was there not a fair amount of crowd trouble that game?
Yeah. 200 arrested.
Bloody hell!
And it looks. I mean, I knew that there'd been trouble after the game when I saw the highlights, so maybe this informs the way it looked. But the crowd did look a bit rowdy.
It's a bit of a shame. Well, obviously it's a shame, but Dortmund fans were so impressive in their support of their team in Manchester.
Yeah.
When they drew one with City.
Yeah, so, I mean, big derby. Look what happened to Sheffield Wednesday Leeds game. Derbies, people go over the top sometimes, don't they?
Dortmund are in jail, isn't he, already?
That's right, yeah. Dortmund are fourth, 12 points off the top spot already.
That's massive. That's even more than Madrid.
Yeah.
And that's just maths.
It's because Bayern Munich have started so well. They've won every single game.
Well, there's only 7 points separate fourth and bottom in the Bundesliga.
What a league.
What a league, Jim.
What a leaguer.
It was Eintracht Frankfurt who got promoted, and they had the best ever record for a promoted side. But then win the first four or five games in a row.
Yeah,
they're still second.
They're second, yeah. Yeah. 5 points behind Bayern. Yeah. 5 points behind Bayern. Let's go to Brazil. Because Neymar scored his 200th goal for Santos against Atletico Mineiro just a day after flying home from Poland after appearing in a friendly for Brazil.
Isn't he still about 12?
200. Did you see that goal?
It was like
he receives it and one flick of the ankle takes out two players and then he's off and then he scored again at the weekend, which is amazing. It's like ridiculous.
And he scored that 200th goal with the number 200 on his back.
That is big time.
Yeah.
There's your James Bond. He knew he was going to score.
I mean, people will detract from his goal scoring record by saying a lot of his goals come in the state championships in Brazil and stuff like that as well. But I mean, yeah, you can't really argue that record. Yeah, I mean, it is age. That's so many goals.
Indeed it is.
He might get up to Romario's 1,000th.
Or Pelé's.
I mean, technically any of us could with Romario's tactic of doing that.
Pelé got 1,263. Officially, yeah. I think that included like a lot of reserve games and kickabouts of his mates.
I don't know. I mean, if you look at the results of when Pelé was playing, Santos really did murder teams all the time. He got like 100 goals in a league season.
And you can't be rude about him because it's his birthday today.
Oh, is it Pelé's birthday today?
Pelé's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Pelé. I would.
Now, before we go to Pete's game, we've got to talk a little bit about the international football, just quickly from last week. It was a fantastic night of international football after saying that no one cares anymore. Well, my goodness.
It does sometimes feel like only us in this room care about international
football.
Well,
after football. That...
And then that happens, and then we're all like, told you so.
Are you trying to get on the pay sheet?
What is a pay sheet? I'd like to know.
I honestly think it was one of the greatest nights of international football qualifying in years.
Watching people talk about a roof.
That included, but some of the other results that we'll go through in just a sec. But I was absolutely enthralled by the events going on in Warsaw.
You actually rang me giggling. You were so happy.
Poor old Gabriel Clark.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the ITV pundits did a sterling job.
But there was one bit.
Roy Keane laughed at one point, which terrified me.
That was the best bit.
Because he'd been stuck in the room with them for so long, he'd gone mad.
It's because they were chatting and they were
more mad,
different mad.
Yeah. They were chatting away, and every now and then, oh, Gabriel, any more news? Oh.
Southgate would mention some pants. Everyone would laugh. Yeah. The idea of pants. They'd probably see more of other people's pants than any of us do because they've been in locker rooms all their lives. Why have they got such a juvenile sense of humour?
Why are you talking about pants?
Well, Gareth Southgate he's got a good job. He should be a little bit more respectful
they
to undergroundies.
And they said underpants. They said underpants. I thought I did an okay job, given it's very hard for an hour of live TV.
Yeah, it's like rolling news, essentially.
Yeah.
Roof not being shut.
Yeah. I genuinely thought they would just put a Bond film on or something. I assume that was normal.
I wonder how many of the sponsors were in the ears going, keep it going, keep it going.
I love how they kept cutting to guys doing Klinsmanns on the pitch. The Klinsmann dives of Polish fans. That was absolute quality. But the bit where Roy Keane laughed was when Adrian Charles clearly was just thinking, well, what can we talk about? We've just gone to Gabriel Clark three times in the last 2 minutes. There's no fans diving around the pitch. And he goes, we've heard they didn't shut the roof because it was heavy rains, not a monsoon. And he genuinely posed the question in sort of pundit style to Roy Keane. And he went, Roy, I mean, what's the difference between heavy rains and a monsoon? And Keane just started laughing as it comes to this.
Which is lucky because Roy Keane could have gone, I will monsoon down on you in a minute.
Just like, would have pulled the bottom off of his jaw off and started eating it.
I'd like if he just turned the camera and did a fine rendition with accompaniment of Chocolate Rain. Chocolate Rain.
I can't stand the rain by Anne Peebles.
All right.
But at one point, Gabriel Clark was like interviewing people, and I was thinking, she doesn't even work here.
I know. Yeah.
What are you doing?
There was one guy who was just head of referees on the day or something like that, like the FA's referees consultant, something or other. Yeah. Nothing to do with the situation, basically. Yeah. Yeah. But we're just getting blamed for all of it. Yeah.
Why is the roof not closed? I do not know. Why was the roof not closed? Yeah.
I like how ITV usually get criticised for going off air at inopportune moments, but they stayed on air for such a long time. Everyone still complains.
That was the chance. Yeah. I don't care if you work in catering. Why is the roof not closed? Yeah. It was And the funny thing was, it really was genuinely better than the actual game.
Yeah, the game is awful.
Yeah, but I don't want to talk about the game. No. What I do want to talk about, the result of the evening, and possibly one of the results of, again, recent qualifying history.
A result that will echo through history, Mark.
Yeah, it simply will. Germany 4-0 up. Yeah, against Sweden, looking magnificent.
That's never happened to them.
And then there's half an hour to go, and suddenly Big Zlatan scores.
Mm. Yeah,
and he said we knew we had them on the ropes when I scored. Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, Manuel Neuer made a huge mistake as well, which sort of rattled them.
Can I say, Marcus, and you'll pick up on this point, the best night of qualification football in Germany since.
The 5-1?
Big Heskey's night. Yeah. The 1-5.
That's what everyone remembers, isn't it?
1-5.
Yeah. Big Heskey.
5-1, even Heskey scored.
One thing that should be said is, and Nicole Hay wrote a great piece on our website about this, saying some of Germany's goals were so good,
but
they'll never be talked about again.
And it's a shame.
Yeah.
There was one with the Barcelona sort of triangle passing.
Yeah.
It was zigzagging. A
couple
stuff.
Of 1-2s.
It's class, absolute class. But Katanicic and Sweden had other ideas.
I think Sweden will win the World Cup now.
Well, no, the second to Belgium. Sweden-Belgium final.
Actually, talking of how no one cares about international football, what is really refreshing about this Belgium squad is because they've been so rubbish for so long and now they're really good. They're loving it.
Yeah.
They're enjoying qualifiers. You don't see that. Not even the players enjoy the qualifiers.
They have got Wales and Scotland in their group.
I was going to say, Craig Levein was never going to put up much of a fight.
12 points.
But two of the other big results, Spain dropping points at home to France, and Northern Ireland getting a point in Portugal.
Oh, ruining glorious. Cristiano's big day. His 100th cap.
Come on, the boys.
Yeah.
Great scenes.
Actually, isn't our next international match Sweden? Because they're opening their stadium or something.
I think that's a million bloody times.
On the night. I fear.
Don't go 4-0 up. As no, if we had the
that's
option.
That's not a problem. That will not be a problem.
Let's go 4-0 down.
Yeah, and then let them come back another four goals.
That may be a problem.
Oh, dear. Right. And now it's time for Pete's game after this.
Good news, Ramblers. We have a betting partner. And our betting partner, William Hill, are offering to match any sporting bet from £10 to £25 when you, a listener to the Football Ramble, open a new William Hill sports account. Go to thefootballramble.com/William Hill to find out more and claim your free bet now.
All right, it's Pete's Games, where everyone's waiting for, guys. Ah, I'm doing my Mitch Hedberg impression there.
What are the rules this week, Pete?
Oh, it's a little bit different this week, but it's pretty much the same. The title of the game being John Charles Clegg Heads. He was the first... first night of football. Right.
Good.
Who am I? I garnered $3 million in transfer fees across my career.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, mate.
Oh, I thought not that, as in that it.
Stop. Paolo Maldini.
No.
Didn't generate anything.
I had 12 different clubs scoring a total of 226 league goals.
Stop. Oof.
Brian Dean.
I was going to say Brian Dean goal machine. That's... use his full name, please.
No. I'm going to change it up a little bit. I'm going to basically read out some abuse that that this person has retweeted in the last 2 weeks. Somebody wrote him, Martin Atkinson is possibly a bigger twat than you. There's a clue. Why would somebody
stop.
Be tweeting that?
Mark Bright.
No.
No one's a bigger twat than Mark Bright. Perry Groves.
Hang on, Bright is alright, isn't he?
Have a point with marry him then if you love him so much.
Shut up.
At Mark Rylett said, fuck off. And this person tweeted back, parents must be proud. Mike DePike forgot your wife gives great head, and he replies, interesting perspective.
he's quite a reasonable man, soaking it up, rolling with the punches.
Yeah. But he's dishing out as well. Don't worry. He says a few days ago, that's what happens when you send all your builders to England. Hashtag roof won't work.
Stop.
Oh.
Is it this, weird one? But is it Gary Lineker?
No.
Just because he's quite funny on Twitter, and feeds would have been less when he was playing.
Yeah, but no, it definitely won't.
You can rationalise as much as you want. It's
not 12 clubs. Not 12.
Yeah, no, of course. No.
Oh.
Dang.
Stop. Is it John Dahl Thomason?
No, it's not. No.
I'm thinking of Northeastern Strikers, are you?
No. I'm trying to think because I think I saw that tweet.
Come on, next clue.
Last clue, actually.
Hang on.
No, okay.
There's been a lot. There's been enough.
No, it's a bit more.
All right, you can have two.
Why have you got a spare clue?
Keeping that one back.
Well, you usually get them really quickly. I now run a hotel.
Oh, cheers. Stop. Tony Yeboah.
No. But that is true, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you got someone there. Yeah. Very leads heavy, this quiz, isn't it?
So basically,
come on, what's the next one?
The next clue is him talking about running a hotel. He says, I think running a hotel must be every woman's dream because there's always something that needs decorating.
That's not a clue!
I just wanted to show that he's sexist.
Stop, Mike Newell.
No, not Mike Newell. Still a sort of era, though.
But just a future reference point.
Give us a proper clue.
A future reference point. But if you give a load of clues that are nothing to do with it, we won't get it.
Right, why has he mentioned Martin Atkinson?
I don't know.
Recently. We talked about him earlier on. What match did he play in? And why is he getting... Why is he
staying
at Martin?
The Newcastle game. That's why I was thinking of a North Eastern Strikers. That's why I said that. Stop, is it Peter Beardsley?
No. It's Beardo. More than 3 mil.
Yeah.
I played for Derby and Sunderland. That's off the top of my head, to be honest.
Is it really?
Is it a striker?
Yes.
Nah, go on. I can't. I've got nothing.
No.
York City?
Oh, cheers.
Yeah. Marco Gabbiadini.
Gabbiadini.
Come on.
God, fair enough.
An interesting perspective.
Well, not fair enough, but fair enough.
Fuck off, as that tweet says.
Interesting perspective. Let's have an email.
Let's.
Go on then.
Get dressed, ramble.
Contrary to popular rumours, we are all dressed while recording.
I'm not sure what was so massive in the world of football last week that it overshadowed the best thing to ever happen in the history of the world and possibly the universe. Alessandro Del Piero and Emil Heskey scored goals in the same match, and it was really good. The A-League refuses to recognise the international break, you see, and ploughed on as nothing was happening anywhere else. A week later, and Del Piero has scored the first and only goal in the inaugural Sydney City derby, winning a penalty for himself, being ordered to retake it after slotting it deliciously into the corner, having his second saved and smashing on the rebound. He's slow and suspiciously pudgy, but by the sting in a stingrail stinger, he is still a very good player.
Great sentence.
Further up the coast in the F3 derby, it's the name of a road, forgive us our sins, we won't, between the Central Coast Mariners and the Newcastle Jets, Emil Heskey netted a tap-in winner before lumbering off the field, as he does. He looks weary of the world and very hot. There are other games and goals, but they're not what people want to hear about. Cheers, Max in Australia. Thank you, Max.
Big Emil in Australia, plying his trade with ADP. Yeah. Great stuff.
Got a couple of goals,
we mentioned his first match, him and Del Piero, because it was a nice little fin.
I think he got cut.
Oh, cut it out. There you go. It's been on the cutting room floor.
Never mind.
I feel ashamed of myself to leave Del Piero on the cutting room floor.
He operated under Sven, Marcus.
I never chose to cut it.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
Yeah. Well, cheers for that, Max. Anyway, Max writes for the site as well in his spare time, so he's contributing in lots of different ways.
Go on, Maxie, baby.
Probably more than most of us, I'd say.
Arguably. Let's go for a profile, ladies and gentlemen. We have one of the most important coaches in South American football history. It is Cesar Luis Menotti.
Ooh. Jen, you thought you were going to go for Diego then. He's escaped looking for food.
Diego will come up, I would think.
Yeah. At some point. The slender and stylish Argentinian was born on the 5th of November 1938.
Doesn't he?
Oh,
definitely not the Summer of Love.
29 years before the Summer of Love. Cheers for that. Gave me a bit of time to think.
Yeah. Doesn't he have a nickname about how slim he is?
It's
Slim Fast.
El Flaco, the thin one.
That's a name to keep up with, isn't it?
Yeah. You know,
it's an old goal for Daily Mail, isn't it? Oh, look at him. He looks a bit fat now. Yeah.
He's been thin his whole life.
Yeah.
And didn't have a choice.
He's had long hair his whole life, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
Yeah. Renegade.
This man had a profound impact on the Argentina national team setup, which is still prevalent today. And he's an incredibly important figure in the lineage of Argentinian football. And he always had a fag on while the game was playing. Loved to smoke.
Important
didn't.
To mention. It's probably how he stays so thin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kate Moss swears by
appetite
it.
Appetite killer.
He's an incredibly intelligent scholar of the game, and his theory was all about attractive attacking football combined with effectiveness, hard work, and power.
The Noki Moistari.
Jonathan Wilson documents this in his excellent article about Menotti. When he came into management in the 70s, there was a kind of a football v anti-football debate going on in Argentina. Any sort of efficient football was kind of frowned upon by some, but Menotti said, I believe efficacy is not divorced from beauty.
Didn't he also have like, sort of quite severe left-wing views, even though there was like a military hunter in power at the time?
He did, yeah.
Wasn't he actually employed within that, though?
Well, I think people were concerned about his safety because he kept piping up with this really outspoken stuff, and then which was obviously a big no-no at the time in Argentina.
But I think he had... Did he not have all right relations with some of the...
Oh, imagine
it was. Yeah, it was a very sort of grey area at times.
And also, it's hard to shoot with a thin man, so, you know.
That's true, if he's fat.
True, yeah.
Maybe he was thinking that, yeah.
Yeah, two-dimensional, it's fine. Mm. You're never going to hit me.
It's an excellent
statistics
point.
Statistics are on my side. Mm.
He was a player before going into coaching. Played for Rosario Central, Racing Club, the New York Generals, but most notably Santos in Brazil with Pelé as a teammate. He finished playing in 69 and was, I suppose, inspired by the Brazil side of 1970 into that in that magnificent World Cup. And he moved into management at the start of the 70s. Now, his first real statement in the game was when he took charge of Huracan FC. Not a stylish side by any means, but Menotti got them playing and they won the 1973 championship with the very unfancied Huracan side from Buenos Aires. Which was the last time Huracan won Argentina's top prize. And they played such great attacking football that Menotti's Huracan are still regarded as one of the best teams in the history of the Argentine League.
Lovely stuff.
Which is absolutely
as the
remarkable.
Carton went, the champion spirit was here to stay.
Yeah,
that's right.
The Huracans.
Just to back up his one of his favourite theories about the game, he said, a goal should just be another pass into the net.
Ah, nice.
Well, we played against the London version of Huracan and they destroyed us.
Yeah, so that's true, yeah. Menotti's legacy lives on.
That's true.
Yeah.
He was given the national team job in 1974 and at the time Argentina had just been hammered 4-0 in the 74 World Cup. Also, now, strangely enough, I didn't know this, but back then players would often refuse to travel abroad to play for Argentina. The top players, clubs would hold their players back from international duty.
Nick their passports.
as opposed to now, they just turn to pretend to be injured.
Well, no, but for Argentina, the pride of playing in the blue and white shirt wasn't as evident back then. He had a great deal in the 78 World Cup making sure that clubs released their players, but some of the players just weren't that bothered. It seems very, very strange because now they're so proud to play for the club. I mean, as we said earlier, Messi was playing for Argentina and a couple of days later he's playing for Barcelona. They always turn up, the Argentinian players, don't they? They've always got Aguero and Tevez. Well, there's the odd little friendly, understandably so, but back then it was...
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting.
It was so strange and he overhauled that whole kind of thinking. He brought the pride back into the national team. I thought, you know, he thought the 1978 World Cup, which of course they hosted, was a great chance for that, and he certainly did. He gave Diego Maradona his debut for the national side. Didn't pick him for that 78 World Cup. He was one of three players from the 25 man squad that was trimmed down.
Was his debut against Scotland?
I think it was against Hungary. Actually.
Was that okay? Right. One of his early games was certainly in Scotland, wasn't it?
Yeah. But Menotti played a 4-3-3 with the likes of Kempe, Jardiles and Oscar Ortiz bringing big contributions.
Passarelli was captain, wasn't he? And then yeah, Tarantini, who was absolutely mad. Properly mental, he gets set off all the time.
Now, you know, Menotti's finest hour, of course, was the 1978 World Cup. And one could say it helped that Argentina were hosting the tournament. There are one or two little conspiracy rumours about certainly the 6-0 against Peru.
But was the referee not one of the player's brother-in-law? Something like that?
Those conspiracy rumours are loud. From both the Peruvian and Argentinian side. Yeah.
It was something very, very dodgy. Like the referee was the brother-in-law of someone's doing the Argentinian FA or something like that.
Right.
Somebody couldn't have researched that then, no?
they needed to win by 6 goals to go through and they won 6-0 or something like that, wasn't it?
I think it was 4.
Okay, right.
Well, the other rumours were Peru might have taken a bribe because they were already out. But still, they still got into the position.
Teofilo Cabillas in that game for Peru.
He probably would have been.
Mario Kempes, who obviously ended up as top scorer in that tournament,
yeah.
A magnificent looking man.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like a cross between Nick Valencia, the Strokes, and the actor Luke Wilson.
Yeah, good thinking.
Yeah, very good hair.
Yeah,
very strong hair. The strong hair of a man from good stock.
Mm. Shiny hair.
Very shiny. Very well kept.
It was more of a coat.
Yeah, it was a coat, yeah. It was, yeah. A baker's complete coat.
But as I say, with regards to Argentina, hosting the tournament... Yeah, clearly those rumours, one thing, if they are to be believed, it helped Argentina. But at the time, Argentina was not in the best shape politically. It was very much clubs versus country as well.
I imagine it was quite controversial that they were able to host it.
Yeah, and so actually...
Wasn't there a situation as well, sorry to butt in there, where Boca and River wouldn't release their players?
Yeah, that's it. A lot of the clubs wouldn't. And
that's
Menotti,
crazy. That's
Menotti
like Man United and Chelsea. Not
Menotti had a real task on his hands to change that and change the mentality. And he obviously thought 78 World Cup, they're hosting it, this is the chance to really change the way the national team will progress. And they did. did, and they have done since then. This is what I'm saying. I mean, it's almost slightly if you can have a slight revolution, you know, kind of thing going on.
Sounds like an indie band.
So they on the way to the final, they beat Hungary, Platini's France, Poland, and Peru, and they faced the Dutch. In the final, and Argentina with the home crown would go and win 3-1 after extra time. And Daniel Passarella, valuable member of that Argentina side,
who's a captain,
said this of Menotti: he always knew exactly what to say to motivate his players. He was always very calm. We only saw him get angry once, just before extra time in the final against the Netherlands. He looked at us and said, "Look around you, there are 80,000 of us and 11 of them. We're not going to lose, are we?" Absolutely love that. It's just, it's true, isn't it? Can you imagine how much that would pump you up? And Menotti himself said after the celebrations in the dressing room and whatnot, he went down to the obelisk, which is in the centre of Buenos Aires, and he said he wanted to celebrate with the rest of the supporters, but he put on a disguise so no one would recognise him.
He put on a fat suit.
He just smoked loads of fags, so like it was just a bit of smoke following him around.
That player, the player Tarantini for Argentina, who was part of the squad who won it, he played for Birmingham for a bit.
He played
for Birmingham, and he was mad. And I think he played like 20 odd games for Birmingham, and his final game, he symbolised his final game by wading into the crowd and punching a fan because the guy had like chipped off at him too much. And he just never played for the club again. Went back to Argentina. He's mad as a nail, honestly.
Oh dear. A year later, after the World Cup win in 1978, he coached the Argentina youth team at the World Youth Championships in Japan. They won the tournament with Maradona picking up the Player of the Tournament award. They played 6 matches, winning them all, conceding 2 goals and scoring 20. They were absolutely magnificent. And Maradona, years later, said of that tournament he'd never enjoyed himself so much on the field than playing for Menotti in that tournament.
Well, he cut him from his squad, didn't he, from his initial squad for
that's
the 78
right.
World Cup.
And he was 17 at the time.
Yeah, and quite hot-headed, it's fair to say, Maradona.
Yeah, really, I think so.
As a character. So he took it badly, if I remember, from his book.
Yeah.
Is that right? Mm. But he loves him, though.
Yeah, yeah, well, he learned to sort of grow up a little bit.
Well,
that much.
Well, a year later. You know, he's saying it's the best time he's played.
It's almost like he varies wildly between opinions. He's probably trying to pick him for the 2010 World Cup.
Menotti did coach Argentina at the World Cup in 82, but they went out in the second phase, losing to Italy and Brazil.
Well, the 78 World Cup had two phases, didn't it? Had two group stages.
Yeah.
I think the top two of the second round went through to the semis. Argentina and Brazil won, and Holland and another team in the other. It's quite interesting the way the World Cup format's changed over the years.
Oh yeah, it's changed massively.
I'm glad it's got simpler though, to be fair.
Yeah.
Well, the European Cup was also weird like that when started.
Yeah. Qualifying's more complicated now, I think.
So after they went out in 82, it was the end of his incredible time as Argentina coach. Straight after that, he was installed as Barcelona manager in Spain, and he went on to manage a number of teams around the world, including Boca and Atletico Madrid, River Plate, Peñarol, and the Mexican national team, amongst others. And wherever he played, he always took his footballing philosophies with him. And bear with me, I have to read out this quote, because it's not the average for a football manager. "I maintain that a team is above all an idea, and more than an idea, it is a commitment. And more than a commitment, it is the clear convictions that a coach must transmit to his players to defend that idea. So my concern is that we coaches don't arrogate to ourselves the right to remove from the spectacle the synonym of festival, in favour of a philosophical reading that cannot be sustained, which is to avoid taking risks. And in football, there are risks. Because the only way you can avoid taking risks in any game is by not playing."
I think I had Harry Redknapp say that.
Football manager said that.
Yeah. I imagine his team talks were dumbed down a little.
Yeah.
Did you babelfish that back and forth through a few languages? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's incredible, isn't it? He has to come in at the end, sort of. I mean, he won Argentina their first World Cup. He overhauled their national team. And their national team, the Argentina national team, has given the world so many glorious moments in World Cup.
And he probably set the foundation to win the second one as well in 86.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Maradona loves him. And that's good enough for me. Ladies and gentlemen, in comes Menotti to the Dean Windass Hall of Fame.
Let's not have a speech, fella. Just take your award and sit down.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the Football Ramble. If you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The Twitter is @footballramble, and the website is thefootballramble.com.
Yes, it is. You know the score by now. Thefootballramble.com. Get yourself over there. Plenty of stuff to do while you're listening to this. You can listen to the show on that website if you're not doing it through iTunes. You can read all our lovely in-depth articles, see a weekly cartoon, chat on the forum with fellow Ramblers.
Video updates.
Lots of videos. Loads of stuff.
Sweet as a nut.
Yeah, I'm doing my Edinburgh show in Brighton on Sunday. I can't remember where. Tweet me if you want to come.
That's two vastly different places. There's Edinburgh in Brighton. Imagine that, people.
Yeah. Right, say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Tweet me if you want to come. Bye.
All right, Jason Manford.
When you want to come.
And it's goodbye from me.
Oh, when you want to come.
That's loud, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like a dog barking. You're not a dog, are you, James?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.